Something bitter rises up, which chokes them amid the very flowers, either when the conscious mind itself happens to gnaw at itself for wasting its life in idleness and perishing in dens of vice, or because she has flung out some ambiguous word and left it hanging, which, fixed in his eager heart, comes alive like fire, or he thinks she casts her eyes about too much or looks at another and sees traces of laughter in her face. And these ills are found in love that is going well and most smoothly for its own sake. But in love thwarted and wanting, there are ills you could grasp even with your eyes light shut, past counting, so that it is better to watch beforehand in the way I have taught and to take care not to be lured in. For to avoid being cast into the snares of love is not so hard as, once caught in the very nets, to get out and burst through Venus's strong knots. And yet, even tangled up and shackled, you could still escape the danger, unless you stand in your own way, and unless you first overlook all the flaws of mind or of body in her, whatever woman you long for and desire. For men, generally blinded by desire, credit her with charms that are not truly hers. And so in many ways we see women who are misshapen and ugly held as darlings and flourishing in the highest esteem. And men mock one another and urge each other to make their peace with Venus, since they are themselves afflicted by a shameful love, and the wretches often fail to notice their own far greater faults. The black-skinned girl is honey-toned, the unwashed and rank one is unadorned, the gray-eyed one a little palace, the sinewy, wooden one a gazelle, the tiny dwarf is one of the graces, pure wit through and through, the huge, monstrous one is awe-inspiring and full of dignity. The one who cannot speak plainly has a charming lisp, the mute one is shy, but the fiery, hateful chatterbox becomes little torch. The one who can hardly live for thinness becomes a slender darling, the one who is truly half-dead of a cough is delicate, but the over-large, big-breasted one is Ceres herself, nursing Bacchus, the snub-nosed one a wood nymph or a satyress, the thick-lipped one all kiss. It would be a long task if I tried to tell the rest of this kind. But still, let her be granted whatever beauty of face you like, the one from whose limbs the whole force of Venus rises up for you. Still there are other women too. Still we lived before without her. Still she does the very same things, and we know an ugly woman does all the same things, and the poor thing herself fumigates herself with foul smells, whom her own maids flee far off and laugh at behind her back. But the shut-out lover, weeping, often covers her threshold with flowers and garlands, and anoints the proud doorposts with marjoram oil, and wretched, presses kisses on the door. Yet if once let in and coming toward her, a single whiff should offend him, he would look for respectable reasons to leave, and his long-rehearsed complaint, deeply conceived, would collapse then and there, and he would condemn himself for the folly of having granted her more than it is right to grant a mortal, he now sees. Nor does this escape our own Venuses. All the more do they themselves conceal with the utmost effort all this backstage of life from those whom they wish to keep, and bound fast in love, all for nothing, since you can still, in your own mind, drag everything out into the light and search into all the laughter. And, if she is good-natured and not hateful, in your turn overlook it, and allow for human affairs. Nor does a woman always sigh with feigned love, when, embracing, she joins her body with a man's body and holds him, wetting kisses with clinging lips. For often she does it from the heart, and, seeking a joy held in common, she urges love's race to run its full course. Nor in any other way could birds, herds, and wild beasts, and cattle and mares, submit to the males, if their own nature did not itself, because it is in heat, burn with an abundant desire, and joyfully draw back to meet the Venus of the mounting males. Do you not see too how those whom mutual pleasure has often bound are tormented as if in shared chains, when at the crossroads dogs, often wanting to part, strain apart eagerly with all their strength, while all the while they stay stuck fast in Venus's strong bonds, which they would never do unless they knew mutual joys that could draw them into deception and hold them bound. Wherefore, again and again, as I say, the pleasure is shared. And when, in the mingling of seed, the female by chance overpowers the male's force with a sudden force of her own, and seizes it, then children are made like their mothers, from the mother's seed, as they are like their fathers from the fathers. But those whom you see to have the shape of both, mingling the faces of both parents together, grow from the father's body and the mother's blood. When the seeds, roused through the limbs by Venus's goads, clash together in meeting, as mutual passion breathed as one, and neither of the two overcame nor was overcome. It happens too that sometimes children come to resemble their grandparents and often recall the features of great-grandparents, because parents often conceal within their own body, mixed in many ways, many first beginnings, which fathers hand down to fathers, descended from the family stock. From these, Venus brings forth features by varied chance and reproduces the faces, voices, and hair of ancestors, since these arise no more from a fixed seed than do our faces, bodies, and limbs. And a female line arises from the father's seed, and males come into being, begotten from the mother's body. For offspring always consists of a twofold seed, and whichever parent the thing that is created more resembles, of that parent it holds more than an equal share. And this you can perceive, whether the offspring is a male child or a female one is its origin. Nor do the divine powers ever bar anyone's generative seed, so that he should never be called father by sweet children, and should spend his life with a barren Venus, as many generally suppose, and, in their grief, drench altars with much blood and burn offerings on them, so as to make their wives pregnant with abundant seed. All in vain do they wear out the gods' power and the lots of fate. For some are barren because their seed is, in part, too thick, and others, in turn, because it is too watery and thin beyond what is fitting. Because the thin seed cannot fix its hold fast in place, it dissolves at once and, drawn back, gives way in miscarriage. And further, since the thicker seed, being denser than is fitting, is sent forth, either it does not shoot out with as full a thrust, or it cannot penetrate the places as well. Or, once it has penetrated, the seed mixes only with difficulty with the woman's seed. For couples clearly differ greatly in the harmony of their lovemaking. And some men make some women conceive more readily, while from others other women take up the burden more readily and grow heavy. And many women were barren through many earlier marriages, and yet later found a man from whom they could conceive and grow rich through sweet childbearing. And men whose fertile wives at home had often been unable to bear them children, for them too a matching nature was found, so that they could secure their old age with children. So greatly does it matter that the seeds should be able to mix with seeds fit for generation, and that thick should suit thin, and thin suit thick. And it matters too on what diet life is nourished. For by some foods the seeds thicken in the limbs, and by others, in turn, they grow thin and waste away. And in what ways the pleasing act itself is carried out, this too matters a great deal. For it is generally thought that wives conceive more after the manner of beasts and in the fashion of four-footed creatures, because in this way the parts can take the seed, with the chest lowered and the loins raised. And wives have no need at all of soft, yielding movements. For a woman prevents herself from conceiving and works against it, if she herself, with delight, meets her man's lovemaking with her hips and stirs waves of motion with her whole body gone limp. For she throws the furrow off its straight direction and course from the plowshare, and turns the seed's stroke away from its place. And prostitutes are used to moving this way for their own purpose, so that they should not be repeatedly made pregnant and lie with child, and, at the same time, so that lovemaking itself might be more pleasing to the men, which seems to be of no use at all to our own wives. Nor is it by any divine agency, nor by Venus's arrows, that a woman of lesser beauty sometimes comes to be loved. For a woman herself sometimes brings this about by her own doing, by compliant ways, and by a body kept neatly groomed, so that she easily accustoms you to spending your life with her. And beyond this, habit itself fashions love. For whatever is struck by a blow, however light, if struck often, is nonetheless overcome and gives way over a long span of time. Do you not see, too, that drops of water falling on stone, where the stone threw over a long span of time?